This is Alaskan Legislative Review, a program of analysis and discussion of issues facing the Alaska State Legislature, featuring the faculty and staff of the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. I'm your host and producer, Scott Sterling. Today we'll be discussing public access to the legislature and how citizens can affect the legislative process. Our guest is Wendy Redmond, Special Assistant to the Chancellor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The issue of access to the legislature and how citizens can affect the legislative process is one of concern to many Alaskans. Over the past years, the way the legislature does its business and how citizens can participate in it have been on the minds of many people. Wendy, what is meant by access to the legislature and why is it important?
Well, I think access is the term we use as members of the public to indicate the level to which we are able to input into our individual legislators and to the process itself. Our ability to contact them as individual citizens and to impact the process.
When you speak about access to the legislature, there are many means by which we can do it. What mechanisms now exist for people to communicate with the legislature?
As citizens, we have, in the state of Alaska, we have a particularly unique system set up that doesn't exist anywhere else in the country. Through the legislative affairs offices around the state, and I think there are something like 20-some legislative affairs offices in the state, you may get direct access either by phone, by audio conference, or by telecopier with Juno and with your individual legislator. They have, I think, a one-day delay on most all information coming from Juno to the legislative affairs offices. That provides a tremendous access for the public in each of the communities, and as I said, that's unusual and unique in this country.
Is that system well used by the people
yes.
in Alaska?
Yes, it's becoming more and more well used, of course. Just, I'm not sure what the statistics are at this point, but I know talking with the people here in the Fairbanks office, they have a tremendous load of people that are coming in every day, making phone calls, sending information down, receiving information from Juno. The audio conferences are becoming more and more well used by the public.
So teleconferencing then is a pretty easy way for citizens to get a hold of their legislators and get their views known, get information across, receive information?
Well, the teleconferencing itself is used primarily for bill hearings, although the Fairbanks delegation also utilizes the teleconference network once a week on a regular basis, sometimes twice a week, to just deal with constituent problems. There's some of that going on with the Anchorage delegation, but certainly not as well developed as the Interior delegation. And I think it's every Tuesday night now at 7 o'clock, they have an hour program where people can just come down and to legislative affairs and talk with their legislators.
How about the more familiar ways of letter writing and making phone calls and that kind of thing? Is that still an important way for citizens to get a hold of the legislature?
Oh, yes. And again, we have a system in Alaska that of public opinion messages, which are similar to those that we use at the national level, that are free messages that any citizen can send as many as they want, as often as they want, to individual legislators, up to, I believe, 50 words.
50 words.
Free.
Yeah.
There's some debate among citizens groups as well as legislators themselves on the effectiveness of the TOMs, as they're called, as opposed to individuals sitting down and writing a handwritten letter on an issue. Certainly a phone call, unless you know the legislator personally, is ineffective in that it's very difficult to get through to them. If you can't get through to them, you simply leave a message with a secretary or an aide. And unless you're well-versed on the issue and those individuals know who you are, that's probably the least effective way. The POMs, then, would probably be the next least effective way. Handwritten letters and personal visits are best. The POMs, I think, their greatest effectiveness are on those issues where the legislature is trying to get a gross vote total.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, on the ERA, which was recently up for a hearing, the PLMs became very important in trying to just get a general feeling of what the pro and con votes were on it. On something like the permanent fund dividend program, again, the POMs are a very quick way to assess in a gross manner what the mood of the public is.
So legislators rely on that kind of input to get a feel for how people at home are, what their opinions are on some kind of issue.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that there's a fair amount of lobbying going on in Juneau. Why is lobbying necessary?
Well, the Alaska legislature deals with probably close to 1,000 separate bills a session. There are a tremendous number of issues that go into the legislature during the session that haven't been discussed by the candidates prior to the session beginning. That is, they don't receive broad discussion during the campaign. So the candidates go down relatively unfamiliar on many issues. So it is important once they're there, and the issues then become much more important than they were during the campaign, or issues come up that were never discussed, for citizens and people in the public sector who have some expertise on those issues to communicate with their delegation.
Is it feasible for individual citizens or groups of citizens to lobby?
Oh, sure, and they do it all the time, some more effectively than others. There's a real art to knowing how to lobby effectively. And I'm speaking now of public interest lobbyists as opposed to professional paid lobbyists for special interest or industry-based groups. Almost all of the citizens in Alaska participate in one way or another in the legislative process. That's the nature of our state. A very small state with citizens actively involved in all levels of government. It's possible in this state, and in fact probable, that all of the major decision makers in the state know all of the other major decision makers personally, inside and outside of the legislature. That kind of, some have called it coziness, creates an interesting dynamic. But one of the dynamics is a tremendously high level of interaction between the public and the legislature.
So we see that citizens are able to use a variety of mechanisms to get a hold of the legislature. They can use the public opinion messages, they can teleconference, they can use the legislative information offices to keep track of bills and find out what's going on, and they can also write letters and make personal visits. Additionally, citizens can go down and lobby.
And also, many of the legislators do maintain offices in their home. And that's yet another way to have impact. And many of them also return back to their communities as often as possible.
So the personal contact is real important.
Mm-hmm.
When individual citizens or public interest groups set out to lobby, are there certain guidelines they should keep in mind, certain ideas that they should follow in order to be as effective as possible?
Well, the most important thing for any group to do is to really understand the issue, number one, and to understand the legislative process. Many groups go down vocal about an issue, totally unaware of what the process is, and they spend a lot of time talking to the wrong people, talking about an issue that in fact isn't a legislative issue at all, or that may not be a legislative issue that is of any relevance during this session. Those are subtle but important things to understand, and they can. So any group needs to talk with someone who understands the process. So the second thing is to target your work in the legislature. That is, it's wasting a lot of time to lobby legislators that are already supportive of your cause. You need to be able to identify those individuals that are key votes. Number three, you need to be prepared with some options regarding a certain issue. If you go with a single, unbendable notion of what it is you want out of the legislature in terms of a statute change, And you'll very often be disappointed if the legislative process is one of some negotiation. So it's always best to be prepared to do some, be prepared with some options that you can present. And of course, most important is to be fairly narrow in what it is you're trying to do. Many groups, many service groups, for instance, go to Juneau on legislative fly-ins and so on, where they have probably a dozen priorities that they're attempting to influence or impact during any 1 year in a two-day fly-in. That's simply unrealistic for a group.
So there's a broad spectrum of groups at work in lobbying legislature at any given time, ranging all the way from municipal governments and professional paid lobbyists to the individual citizens. There is an important distinction you made that I'd like to explore a little farther, and that was what may be an important issue or priority on a citizen group's agenda may not be a priority on the legislature's agenda. Could you speak to that a little more? When the legislature, as in when the legislature addresses an issue, it may or may not be an issue that's also high on the public's agenda?
Well, I think you've hit on one of the key things in any kind of lobbying effort, any kind of persuasion effort. It is the role of the lobbying group to show the legislature why it should be of interest to them. And that's of course the key to any kind of lobbying effort. To be successful, the legislators individually and collectively must see it as in the best interest of the community, and that's the task of the lobbying group, to show why it is.
And that's a good measure of their success.
Yes. It's most unusual, despite what the public perception is of the legislature, that there are individual legislators placing in the budget or placing in our state statutes law changes or appropriations, et cetera, that are of benefit only to them individually or to their constituents. That simply is not the way they do business. They couldn't afford to do that on any regular basis. The more glamorous and titillating stories we hear are anomalies.
All right. I have a question. Where do legislators get their information? Are lobbying groups and citizen groups an important source of information when legislators consider an issue?
I've often wondered that myself. most of the legislators are bright and competent people and have extremely bright and competent staff, but sometimes some crazy issues come up and one scratches one's head and says, I wonder where they got this information. But generally speaking, each of the individual legislators will come to the session prepared with a list of priorities based on what they have heard and what they know about their own communities and the needs of their own constituencies. So you can see lobbying really begins before the session begins. After the session begins and the legislators begin putting in those pieces of legislation, either pre-filing them or putting them in early in the session, additional issues come in, or the legislators take a broader perspective than their local communities and begin going in with other of their peers on bills and legislation that have a more statewide impact. They seek out, the staffs of the legislators seek out input from people in the agencies that are or will be responsible for implementation of certain kinds of statutory changes. They seek out information from experts in the field, particularly if we're dealing with natural resources, health, education. They go back to the people in the institutions that have the expertise in those areas. Often they rely on people from the public coming to them with draft pieces of legislation or with issues that they would like to see converted to legislation.
So the legislators are looking to the public as a source of information, not only just to get an idea of how a particular issue will wash back home or a particular mm-hmm. idea, but also looking for new ideas and new sources. How can public interest groups be effective in the legislative process?
Well, first of all, they have to accept the notion that in fact they are part of the legislative process. And very often in this country, public interest groups and citizens and individuals feel so far removed from the process that they don't even try. So number one is, I think, a perception shift, that people truly have to understand that they do count, they do have an impact. Those legislators are elected by us, the public, and if we don't like the job they do, they can be unelected. So along with that perception shift, then has to come a clear agenda of the individual groups. They have to define what it is they want, and why existing statutes, if that's what they're looking for, are inappropriate to accomplish their agenda.
A good example of public interest is oriented around such issues as limiting the legislative session. This is an issue that's as old as the state of Alaska. It was debated at the Constitutional Convention, and there have been many rules and resolutions and proposals from the legislature and from public groups since then. When an issue like that directly affects how the legislature itself does business arises, are legislators particularly aware and sensitive to how the public feels about something like that?
I think so. I think there's a lot of embarrassment that begins to set in towards the 130th day of the session, when the public is starting to get rise up in disgust that nothing is happening. And the media image that we get of the legislature often is somewhat distorted and sometimes unfair in terms of the infighting that's going on and so on. The media tends to highlight on the more negative aspects of it. And at that point, the legislators themselves begin to get nervous. They know that they've been away from their constituents too long. They also would like to see the session and in a more efficient and expeditious manner. I think, however, that there is not widespread support for mandating a 120-day session.
It's a volatile issue, I know that.
It's an artificial limitation. I think the feeling that I pick up in Juneau this year is that it really is an artificial limitation. What if there are good and rational reasons for a session to go on, and you end up with a constitutional amendment or with a statutory amendment that they can simply get out of? I mean, any law that they create is going to have a loophole that they can get out of.
Yeah.
So it becomes somewhat of a sham in itself.
Would you say it's a fair perception that public interest groups in Alaska are generally more closely involved with their legislature, and that our legislature is more receptive to lobbying and input from public interest groups and individual citizens than, say, California or New York or somewhere
sure.
like that?
Sure, I think that's generally accepted as being true. Now, of course, there's something operant here that isn't operant in any other state, and that is that we have had lots of money to give away. And the other states that are dealing with a much more stable and, in fact, much more dramatically declining revenues than Alaska haven't had to be bothered with as much public interest lobbying as we have.
What is the importance to an individual citizen, not the importance, but rather, say an individual citizen has a particularly bill that they are interested in, is it possible for them to keep track of that bill and follow its path through the legislative process?
Well, 75% you can track it. And that is that they have, through legislative affairs, they have a system called BASIS, which everyone can tie into. And BASIS is a bill tracking system. You can call legislative affairs and give them the number of your bill and ask them where it is, and they will tell you all of the committees to which it has been referred and give you details of all of the committee hearings that have been held to that point. That BASIS system is updated every day at 4 o'clock after the session. So you do have accurate information on what committee the bill is in. However, the part that you can't know from basis is what that committee plans to do with it. For instance, bills often get sent to certain committees to die. Judiciary Committee, for instance, is known as a graveyard for bills. That's not always true, but often enough that if a bill that I'm particularly interested in gets sent to Judiciary, I think, uh-oh, trouble. There are other bills where the committee chair may not like the bill and it simply won't get heard. Again, you need to look also at who the sponsors of the bill are. If the sponsors of a bill in the House happen to be members of the House minority, it is most unlikely that that bill is going to go anyplace very quickly. So you can look on the basis system and see where it is, but you need to understand some of the other subtleties of the system as well. And those can be, a citizen can access those subtleties, I think, by picking up the phone and calling the sponsor of the bill if they're particularly interested in it. And the sponsor or the sponsor's aide will let you know what the success or failure potential is.
This whole discussion we're having brings to mind the question, do you think it would be worthwhile to attempt to educate the public on the legislative process on a systematic basis?
Oh, absolutely. And I know a lot of groups and individuals have certainly sought out that kind of assistance. I've spoken with several groups myself, both here in Fairbanks and in Anchorage, and there are many other individuals who have done the same thing. There are groups that have the Business and Professional Women, the Alaska Women's Political Caucus, other special interest groups that have had special legislative work sessions so that they can begin to understand the process, some of the subtleties, and to develop strategies for really implementing their agenda items through the legislative process.
It seems that if we had a systematic way of educating citizens as to the ins and outs of the legislative process, it would help enhance access. It would help people and the legislature achieve a better rapport, mm-hmm. perhaps exchange better and higher levels of information all along the line. Are there any other ways we could enhance public access to the legislature from the point of view of the individual citizen?
Well, as you know, there are lots of things that have been introduced this session as a result of the Capital Move initiative during this election. Those people who were supporting the retention of Juneau as the capital made all sorts of promises relative to what kinds of enhanced accessibility would be implemented if the capital were to stay in Juneau. And so as a result of that, we've seen a lot of things introduced in the legislature this year, the intent of which is to enhance that accessibility. Things like changing the time zone, maintaining a consistent time zone across the entire state, toll-free phone calls to all legislators and state agencies, rotating sessions between Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks. I'm not sure that any of those particular items will succeed. My last reading from friends in Anchorage and Fairbanks was that none of us want the Capitol anywhere near our communities. they costed out the toll-free phone system, and the minimum estimate on that was close to $5 million a year. So that one didn't go anywhere. I think some of the things that haven't been brought up legislatively yet but that I would suggest to enhance access would be to provide opportunities for our legislators to return home to their own districts more often, number one. To provide greater access to the legislative computing network. As of today, the computing network is available only in legislative affairs offices. Fairbanks, for instance, has only one computer. Those computers should be in every public library. They should be at all university, community college, and learning center sites. That entire network needs to be expanded.
How about taking the amount of information that's processed on a daily basis and getting it out more. Are we doing a good job with that, with legislative information now? Essentially, a citizen can call up now and get a fair idea of what's gone on that day and what will be happening in the upcoming week or so.
Right. And yeah. It's hard for citizens, again, if you're not really closely involved with the process, if you were just simply reading the daily journals, which are the thing that you should read to see what's being introduced each day, the journals from the House and the Senate, you would think, I think the average citizen would be somewhat alarmed and feel somewhat overwhelmed at the need to contact their legislator on a more frequent basis. But one of the subtleties that is very difficult to explain to people who aren't involved in the process is that the vast majority of legislation that's introduced goes nowhere.
All right.
And is not worth a lot of time or effort on the part of constituent groups to lobby against.
So in sum, the legislative process from the point of view of individual citizens is that the kind of information and the way you go about your business is crucial in order to seeing it placed on the legislative agenda, and that Alaska has made some significant efforts in expanding access to the legislature.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Wendy. This has been Alaskan Legislative Review. Today we've been discussing citizen access to the legislature and the legislative process. Our guest has been Wendy Redmond, Special Assistant to the Chancellor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Alaskan Legislative Review is a production of KUAC-FM, University of Alaska, Fairbanks. I'm Scott Sterling. Our executive producer is Carla Tonella. If you would like a cassette copy of Alaskan Legislative Review, please write to KUAC-FM, University of Alaska, Fairbanks, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.